This past week, to the surprise of everyone, including the leadership of the U.S. military, President Trump tweeted that transgender people will no longer be permitted to serve in the U.S. military. With us now to discuss the impact of this decision, the potential of it becoming an actual new policy, and what's not being understood about the transgender community is a member of the Advisory Board of the American Unity Fund, a member of the Law Cabin Republicans, Mercer County Republican Party committee person, small business owner, member of the New Jersey LGBT Chamber of Commerce, Jennifer Williams. Thanks for being here today, Jennifer.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate having me on for your listeners.
And to learn more about this issue through the work of the American Unity Fund, their website is AmericanUnityFund.com. And since obviously we're the audio and not the visual, Jennifer, you are a member of the transgender community, correct?
That is correct. I'm transgender myself, and I'm an activist as well as a Republican and a conservative. And, you know, sometimes that surprises people that you could be LGBT, let alone transgender, and be Republican and conservative. But for me, the values of freedom and opportunity and equality really coincide together, and I'm really happy to be able to be a representative of our party.
Well, let's start with the obvious. This is the the tweet, or technically three tweets since the character limitations being what they are, but it goes as follows. After consultation with my generals and military experts, please be advised that the United States government will not accept or allow transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military. Our military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgenders in the military would entail. Thank you. That was President Trump's tweet from this past week. Your initial reaction when you either read or heard or saw what he had posted?
I was totally shocked. I was driving to work in my car on Route 1 passing Princeton, actually. And when I heard the announcer read the tweets verbatim, I was kind of blown away. I mean, I'm not going to tell you I haven't expected something like this to occur at some point. But for it to occur via tweet without the consultation of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the heads of all the services, and particularly General Mattis, Secretary of Defense Mattis, who's been leading the effort with the six-month hold on how to implement transgender military service and also the medical side of it, it was totally shocking. And as an American, I feel terrible about what happened, and as a transgender person, I think I'd go without saying, it felt like for me, particularly someone who's a fellow Republican, as President Trump is, felt like he kind of hit me in the stomach with a 2x4. I'm not going to kid you. But the good that's come out of it has been a lot of support around the country, and particularly from the military community, from great leaders that we have, General Dunford, John McCain. A lot of different people have come forth. Several different senators, Senator Hatch from Utah, who's never spoken out on transgender issues before, has announced himself as a supporter of the community, and particularly our military. And what's disconcerting is I have five brothers who served. My dad served in the Pacific in World War II. I have four nephews who have served, and I have four of my family members are Marines. And when someone takes that oath to pledge to defend our country, risk their life, et cetera, we should be honoring that of everyone and be grateful and proud that they want to stand up to defend ourselves. And what I am concerned about is with everything that's going on in Washington and a lot of the distractions, one of our enemies overseas, like ISIS, is going to try to take advantage of it. So it was a shock to the system. I was upset about it, but I think the goodwill that's come about from all of our leaders in our community reaching out and getting support from the military, and the Pentagon's announced that they're not going to implement this policy until they get clarification from the president, that's a really good thing. And I hope that the Pentagon can work this out with them quickly, because uncertainty is the last thing we want in the defense of our country.
I think, at least from what I've been gathering, what people are latching onto from the tweet series was the line, "Victory cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical cost and disruption that transgenders in the military would entail," that being the military paying for any transition procedures. And, again, I guess unofficial counts or are what they are, but the best I was able to ascertain was that comes to a total of 250 members of the military, and that's probably at the high end of any estimated number. That doesn't sound like there'll be a tremendous medical cost.
No, it wouldn't, and I'm glad you brought that up because that has been one of the most disconcerting parts of this whole argument, particularly last week with the Hartzler Amendment that Congresswoman Hartzler from Tennessee wanted to push through, because when they're the other side, shall I say, the opponents of trans service are saying that the costs are going to be billions of dollars, but then you have the RAND Corporation that did a very extensive study, and at most it would be $8.4 million a year. And it wouldn't be hard for any of your listeners to go on the internet and see comparisons of what we pay for Viagra compared to that for retirees, for what we've paid for other medical services that are fully elective. The argument that a financial burden we place on a military is ridiculous. I'm thankful that the Pentagon is working with real numbers. And then also, RAND Corporation studied military readiness and found that there would be no damage to military readiness. So these arguments that have been put forth are really straw men. And if people want to look at the study, it's very easily found from the RAND Corporation. It's only 5 pages. It's direct information, really easily obtained. And I hope they do, because one of the last things we need going forward out of this is misinformation, but also people not having the accurate numbers. I would not be on the radio with you. I would not be out there arguing about this issue, speaking about this issue, nor would anyone else, if we didn't know that the numbers were true and that General Mattis and the Pentagon were going by the same numbers. Because if transgender Americans are going to serve, we want them to be serving as equally and as securely as every other member of the service.
Starting with Jennifer Williams, who's a member of the Advisory Board of the American Unity Fund, a member of the transgender community as well. She's also a Mercer County Republican Party committee person and member of the New Jersey LGBT Chamber of Commerce. Learn more about this issue at AmericanUnityFund.com. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. A moment ago, you used the word elective. I think maybe that's another point of opposition that some are using, that the process of transition is, they classify it as elective surgery, and the taxpayer shouldn't be, the cost of that shouldn't be placed upon the taxpayer.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Through military funding. What's your response to that argument presentation?
Well, it's not elective surgery. It's actually medically necessary surgery, because for someone to fully transition, and not everyone is going to move towards full transition, because some people are scared of surgery. It is a major surgery, recovery time, anything that might be involved with it. But what happens when a transgender person does go for what we call gender reassignment surgery, it is a very big event in their life. And it is something that could be medically necessary, and it is, because if you want to be fully functional as a female or as a male, you are born with body parts, shall we say, or you're born medically with a body you should not have been born with. We have, like my case, I have a female mind. I had a male body. Same thing with a transgender male. They were born with a female body, but they've always had a male mind, a male gender. And I realize that it's sometimes tough for people to kind of grasp that. But the best analogy I can make is, if you're right-handed, Chris, try to go the next week doing everything you do left-handed. It's extremely difficult. By the seventh day, you'll figure out a way to grab that doorknob, to drive your car, to pick up a glass of water, whatever it might be, with your opposite hand, but you know it's not right. That is what it's like to be transgender in many ways, because you're always off. Things aren't exactly right as they should be. And medically, when it comes to the military, by being able to treat the transgender sailors, Marines, airmen, sailors that would come forth and want to transition while in service, I can promise you, from the ones I've met and the transgender veterans I've met, and I'd ask people to search the internet, there's plenty of videos, plenty of media the last couple of days, they are some of the most impressive individuals we've ever had serve, from helicopter pilots to infantry to Kristen Beck, Navy SEAL. She served 20 years. She was on SEAL Team 6 before the Bin Laden raid. She retired. And some of the best people we could ask to join would be from the transgender community, and we actually join at a higher rate than the rest of the population. There are studies from the Williams Institute, no relation, that show that 21% of transgender people join the military. It's certainly much less for the general population. And as far as the cost of the healthcare, the cost would be between $2.4 million and $8.4 million, and that only represents really 0.04% to, I think the higher figure was 0.13% of healthcare expenditures for the military. So that's, we're talking infinitesimal numbers. We would lose no battle. We would not give up any ground to ISIS, Al-Qaeda, any of our enemies because of trans people serving. And if anything, we would increase the available population who want to step forth and enlist. And that's what we should do. Just two quick examples. There were this past year, we found out at the end of the academic year that we had two academy grads, one from West Point and one from the Air Force Academy, who did all 4 years, had hundreds of thousands of dollars of training, hard work, all their efforts. Maybe for naught, because they will not be allowed to be enlisted in the military, because we need that six-month window for General Mattis and his team of experts to decide where we go from here. That should never happen. We should take the best from the best, have them enlist, hopefully make officer grade if that's what is the best option for them, and serve our country. And what their medical needs are should never come into play.
I'm glad you mentioned the names that you did in that last bit of information, because unfortunately, and this is, I lay the blame on people in my industry, they'll bring this topic up and strictly, solely, singly focus on a Bradley Manning, completely yes. Overlooking the people that you've just mentioned, the heroes you just mentioned, and the
Chelsea. Mm-hmm.
Chelsea Manning. And what you just did, too, is I think you helped the person listening right now get a better understanding that there is a difference between sex and a gender identity.
Which yes, there definitely is. There's actually a great saying about this that Laverne Cox, who's a spokeswoman for our community, and she's most popularly said it. Gender identity is who you go to bed as. Sexual orientation is who you go to bed with, shall we say. And they're totally separate things. I can't necessarily relate to a gay male. There's certainly a lot of things I can relate to, but as far as what their life experience is, who their identity is, that's different than who I am. So they are two totally different names, two different things.
We're having our time with Jennifer Williams, who is a member of the Log Cabin Republicans, Mercer County, New Jersey Republican Party committee person, as well as a member of the advisory board of the American Unity Fund, which is at AmericanUnityFund.com, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. So we have this, I think, a very important discussion on the table now through a series of tweets. Moving forward, do we have to, how important is it to determine whether more people are against the transgender choice, for lack of a better phrase, or are they more confused by it? And if it's the latter, what's the remedy for that?
Well, the first thing is actually to recognize that it's not a choice. It truly isn't. I would never choose to be transgender. I would not choose for you to be transgender or anyone else, because it is a difficult experience. It's a difficult life to go through, and realizing that you're being forced to live as someone you're not, that you're always going to feel out of place until you transition, and then you really get alignment from your mind to your body. And we call it living authentically, and it's totally a different way. I can tell you, when I transitioned and even began the hormone process, being able to be totally grounded, not have dysphoria bothering me or anything, I became a better leader. I became a better employee. I became a better parent. And I will say this, I became a better member of society, because you can't give your all to the world unless you have all of you in one place. And it's something where what we call a cisgender person, such maybe as yourself, you never have to deal with an alignment where your gender just doesn't feel right, whereas someone who's transgender does. And if we can get people past the idea that we're choosing to do this, it's not a fetish, It's not something that we would just do on a weekend and go back to work on Monday. This is something that's with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I'm in Generation X. I've seen the changes since I was a kid, when the only people we knew about were Renee Richards or Caroline Cossey, or unfortunately, whatever, you know, folks that Jerry Springer would be on. And it was a very tough age because that was your only role models. But now the kids are growing up today. They have great role models like a Kristen Beck. They have great role models, so many other people, Laverne Cox, a Janet Mock, that they could be really proud of what they're doing, and finding out about the heroes we have in the military. The idea of military service, when I came out of high school in 1986, I desperately wanted to join the Marine Corps, wanted to go into intelligence. But I knew if I wasn't able to suppress who I really was, I would probably get a dishonorable discharge. I remember as a teenager, my dad, we used to love to go see war movies, and he told a lot of good stories about the Navy, but he said one thing to me: if you ever join, don't get in trouble, because you do not want to have dishonorable discharge riding around your neck the rest of your life. But also for me, I'm the youngest of seven. I had five brothers who were in at the same time, and four of them were officers. Two were moving to senior officer grade. If I were to get a dishonorable discharge, what would that do to their careers? So it's a lot different than where we were before, but it's not a choice. But it is something that inhibits your ability to be successful in life if you aren't able to work it out with good counseling. And then hopefully if it's right for you and you feel comfortable and safe, because some places in our country still are not safe, to transition. And once you do that, Chris, I always tell you, and I'd say this to everyone, I'm so much happier as a person right now. I would love to be able to bottle up some of my happiness and give it to someone else who truly needs it. Because life is great. Life is great.
And certainly, too, to have the honesty, maybe the better choice is a self-realization as opposed to a choice. Because that was
very much. That's a great way to put it. That's a great way. It is. Because you don't know what you were missing by not having that self-realization and that grounding before.
And for you listening, listening, I'm a quoteaholic, and I came across this one. You don't need to be.
One of the things I like about your show, actually, I've listened to a lot of your episodes.
Thank you much. And this quote stands out, especially for this debate. You don't need to be straight to fight and die for your country. You just need to shoot straight. And for all you Republicans who have a little difficulty accepting this debate and the direction it's going, you know who that quote is from? U.S. Senator Barry Goldwater.
Yes, it was. It's an excellent quote, and that is one. It really kind of surprises people. When I went to the Republican National Convention last summer, one of my favorite things was to actually get in a discussion with very conservative Republicans, and we had great discussions about how we should be fighting ISIS, about the Second Amendment, the economy. And when I would mention to them, well, you know what Senator Goldwater said, and quote that line as you did, their jaws would drop.
And why I like Jennifer, too, is you know I am repelled by, I call them the head nodders, the people who just look for people who agree with them. That's why, I mean, Facebook is a vast waste of opportunity because that's all people tend to do, unfortunately. But Jennifer goes to win and teach people and win over converts, or at least to a mutual understanding of allowing just the basic tenets of what our country is founded on to be available to everyone, no matter what their personal decision, personal desire, personal self-realization happens to be. And through Jennifer's work and the work of the American Unity Fund, I think they provide a stability to a debate that could very quickly dissolve into insanity and fracture. And I think if that were allowed to happen, that would be a sad state of affairs for what we are supposed to be believing in as far as individuals and rights and liberty and the pursuit of what we feel is needed for our lives to the harm of nobody else. To learn more about this issue and the work of the American Unity Fund, it's AmericanUnityFund.com. Along with being a member of their advisory board, she is a member of the Log Cabin Republicans, Mercer County, New Jersey Republican Party committee person, small business owner, member of the New Jersey LGBT Chamber of Commerce. Jennifer Williams, you add logic and thought to a process and a topic that could get too hysterical and confusing. And for that stability that you're adding, thank you for that and for being here.
Chris, this has been wonderful, and it's an honor to have spoken with you. I can't thank you enough. It was a great pleasure.